Hi, welcome to the Sleep Health Connection. Healthy sleep remains a crucial part of one's health and well-being. Our goal is to bring you the latest information on various topics related to sleep and sleep health. Hi, I'm your host today, Dr. Lydia Sosenko. I'm a practicing dentist in the Naperville area who has worked in the field of obstructive sleep apnea and snoring for over a decade and a half. I currently limit my practice to the treatment of oral appliance therapy for the condition of snoring and apnea, and you can reach me through my website, tiredofsnoring.com. So I'm really excited to bring today's topic, which is such an important topic. Today's presentation is After Your Sleep Test, Five Questions You Must Ask. So we'll start that in just a few seconds. I do need to mention that the information provided today is to be used only as a reference, not as a substitute for professional medical advice. Please consult with a proper medical provider for your particular medical situation. Also, today's content remains the property of Dr. Lydia Sosenko and may be not copied or reproduced in any way without permission. So welcome again to After Your Sleep Test, Five Questions You Must Ask. And it is a topic that we had introduced a couple years back, and it's so, so important, and we are going to bring it up again today. And first of all, why do you need to know your own sleep test results? Well, I would say in the last 15 years with working with sleep apnea and snoring patients, I can honestly say that I have not seen a big advancement in the amount of knowledge that our patients coming in have been access to. And it seems that most patients coming in really have not been discussed all their options, even what level of apnea. Many of them don't even know. They just know they either have it or they don't. So it's really important to kind of ask the right questions yourself. The reasons, a lot of different reasons for this. In general, the sleep field is still a particularly new field in the whole sleep world of medicine. So the knowledge varies from physician to physician, from the type of physician to the sleep centers to the systems involved. So it is far more common for patients not to really know the details of their sleep tests than there are, and it's really important because it could save your life. And so we'll discuss that. Even today, I just had my patient that came in today for one of her visits was a little upset that when she had her first sleep test, right away she got a call back to have a second sleep test set up for a CPAP machine, which is one of the devices to treat obstructive sleep apnea. And there was no discussion from anybody of exactly what was found on her sleep test. There were no options given. And so that's pretty much a very common situation that occurs. And unfortunately, we didn't know when she had the sleep test done until after the fact. So we were able to guide her her path that's best for her along with her physician's knowledge as well. So really important to know all the things that are on your sleep test. Other times, sometimes patients think that they don't have apnea and they were not recommended any treatment options at all, saying that, no, you don't need treatment, and yet they were very, very tired and fatigued. And that's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. So those are probably some of my most neglected patients are the patients that did not score into the apnea zone, that have kind of almost like a pre-apnea type condition, that are tired driving, and really a danger on the road. So these are just a couple examples of why we are talking about what we're talking about today, and to help guide you to know kind of what steps is in your best option to kind of proceed with your sleep test results. So first question to ask, what was my actual diagnosis? Apnea is when you stop breathing at least five times per hour on average, with certain oxygen dips involved with that. There's different types of apnea. Primary snoring could also be a diagnosis where maybe somebody didn't really score high enough to be considered apnea, along with kind of something that's in between, which could be called upper airway resistance syndrome, where someone, again, does not score into maybe the apnea zone, but they do have some of the symptoms that an apneic person does. Along with other sleep disorders, but today we're mainly focusing on the more common obstructive sleep apnea and snoring type of diagnosis. So, again, there's a lot more information on these on previous webinars. So if you go to tiredofsnoring.com, and if you need clarity on more particular areas of today's webinar, please feel free to go on and see the, some of the other topics, because it does break down some of these things a little bit down more. So today we're making the assumption that most of our patients have had a sleep test or will be having a sleep test, or maybe a family member as well. So those are really the ideal. That's kind of where we're starting with that assumption. So it's really important to know what was the actual diagnosis. Second question, what is the overall diagnosis? Was it mild, moderate, or in severe range? A lot of patients who come to us, they basically say, yes, I have apnea, or I don't. Many really don't know the overall diagnosis, which is the average apnea events per hour, basically. And that's how they come up with that overall number, which could be AHI, RDI. It kind of depends on the sleep test center and what their guidelines are. But typically, there's an overall number, and that can put somebody in their mild, moderate, or severe zone. Typically, mild is 5 to 15 events per hour. Moderate is about 15 to 30 events per hour, and severe is about 30 and up. Now, I say about because you could be raised to a higher level if you had an event or a pause in your breathing that lasted a long time. So if it lasted, you know, sometimes somebody could be in the severe range, even though they're in the moderate overall, because their cessation, their breathing lasted a long time, or their oxygen dipped very low. So, again, these are just kind of baseline averages, but it could be a little bit different. So overall, good to know, where are you on an overall level? Next question to ask, which is really a very important and often overlooked and probably one of my biggest pet peeves when I see people have missed this part of knowledge regarding their sleep test. What is the average number of events, or I'm sorry, what were the number average events the same throughout the night, or did they change during dreaming cycles, which is the REM cycles, or on the back sleeping, which is supine, or on the side, which is lateral sleep? So again, were the number of events the same, or were did they fluctuate depending on these things? This is very important because somebody can overall score really mild apnea, which, you know, is usually, again, around 5 to 15. Maybe they scored a 9, which is, you know, it definitely should be treated, but it's a low number. Yet, the sleep test might show that on their back or during dreaming cycles, they might be in the severe range of 40 events per hour. Even more alarming is that if somebody scored overnight under 5, which, again, could be kind of considered normal if somebody's basically reading that, you know, under 5, sometimes it's considered normal and that you don't have apnea, yet then I go back and I look at the test results, and during dreaming cycles, again, it was in the severe range or moderate range of 35, 45, 50 even events per hour. And yet, because their overall diagnosis, you know, the average was brought down because you don't dream the entire night, it brings down that average. So it looks like it actually underestimates the need for treatment. And I see that happening all the time. These are some of my most neglected patients. Some of my most tired and fatigued patients, which is sometimes, I underline sometimes, one of the symptoms of apnea, are actually my mildest of patients. And yet, very often, they were recommended, oh, you don't need treatment, or it's optional for you. Yet if you look back at the sleep test, well, you know, they were maybe had 40 events per hour, which is literally like somebody waking you up 40 times per hour sometimes. So it's really important to know, was it the same the entire night, or their episodes where the number fluctuated? Also, I've had patients with overall might be severe, but they slept the entire night on their back or supine position during a sleep test. And this particular woman was trying for years to get used to her CPAP, one of the, you know, CPAP machine, which is the device most commonly prescribed for severe apnea. She had gone through many, many different types of masks, came to me after several years, just sad that she couldn't get used to it, almost guilty. Yet at home, she never, ever, ever sleeps on her back. She can't because of medical issues. So on the mild, it turns out she had gotten another sleep test with her staying off her back, and she was in a far, far more mild condition, and she felt so much better with that. So it's, again, another situation where you can't just look at that overall number. There's certain pockets of time that should be looked at also. Another question to ask, were all the recommended treatment, all the recommended types of treatments, were they discussed with me? Or what are they for my condition? And very often I tell patients that the American Academy of Sleep Medicine has guidelines that we look at as standard of care for apnea patients. And very typically, not all of the recommended treatments are discussed with patients, unfortunately. So again, we have a patient that might have scored very mild, that's young, had gone to a sleep test, and right away, again, was called to set up her second sleep test for a CPAP titration, which is to figure out the correct adjustment or the level of your that device for the apnea. And yet nobody had recommended, you know, well, could she use other types of therapies? And so this is very, very common as well. Were all the recommended treatment options given to me for my particular situation? So it's just a ask. So some of these, I'm going to go over just briefly, what are some of these treatment options? Well, the most common treatment options I'll discuss here in a moment, but it does depend what is best for you based on your weight, your severity of the diagnosis, do you have other medical problems? There's a lot of things that somebody knowledgeable in the field, a physician knowledgeable in the field, will be looking at. But some of the most common types that are recommended are, number one, weight loss. So if somebody is overweight, and especially in the mild zone, it really could cure them, and that's usually one of the few times that we see that. It definitely will help somebody's level. Also, if they're overweight, if you're on the more severe side, it can maybe make them a little bit less severe, but it's one of the more common things to discuss treatment options. A second treatment option that might be discussed, should be discussed, is a positional device, something that keeps you off your back. Now, this is really important for someone who, for example, we talked about it a few minutes ago, who has a high rate of events on their back, but maybe a lot less on their side. And sometimes you'll have a physician recommend a tennis ball, you know, to be sewn in the back of a T-shirt. Well, there are a lot of other devices you can purchase already with things built in them, you know, to keep you off your back. And for more information, you can, again, look at our tiredofsnoring.com website, where we can reference certain types of devices. But again, this should be could be helpful for somebody who has a discrepancy with a high level of events on their back versus the side, and those are positional therapies. CPAP, which stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure Machine, and these devices are typically one of the best options for especially patients who are very tired, fatigued, sleepy, also for moderate to severe. It's a great option. It can change lives extremely quickly. Sometimes in one night of sleep, you'll have a patient that will try a CPAP device and have just turned their life around and feel wonderful. So it is a great option. Unfortunately, very often it is the only option that's given to most patients who have gone through a sleep test. So it is important to know that there are other options than a CPAP. Unfortunately, research shows that approximately 40 to 60% of patients can't tolerate this type of therapy or don't want to, you know, try this therapy due to lifestyle just restrictions or traveling and things like that. It does involve a bedside machine and a mask and, you know, a plug that you have to plug in. So there's definitely restraints to that, and a lot of people love it, but there are a lot that really have problems with it. So that's the CPAP machine. A great option is, and that's what I work with our patients, and that's oral professional devices or oral appliance therapy. And it's a great life-saving option for many patients. The current guidelines state that oral appliance therapy should be prescribed for patients with mild to moderate or severe apnea, patients who cannot tolerate the CPAP device, or who want another option. And that came around a few years ago. And the most recent changes to those guidelines, and that was in 2005. So, again, oral appliance is a great option for those who want another option, who can't tolerate their CPAP, and it involves a custom mouth professional device made by a trained dentist, preferably. And those dentist you can also find through the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, and specifically the diplomats of that academy are dentists who've taken a test and boards and have gone through a testing process solidify the relationship in that field. So that's a great option to, if you need to find somebody in your area, if you're not in our area, go to the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine to find out more information. So that's a great, again, another great option. Little less common, there's medications and then there's surgery. So the medications are typically for other sleep disorders, not for obstructive sleep apnea. And the surgery might be also suggested if somebody has a blockage in their passages, but the typical surgery for snoring and apnea that involves the back of the throat area, at best, maybe 40% effective is what the research is showing, 40 to 50, and the results, unfortunately, are fairly short-term. So not that common of a treatment option that we recommend for snoring or for apnea patients. Another question, what is the probability of success and what are the side effects for all these treatment options? So if somebody recommends a CPAP, you should also know that there are side effects to the CPAP and what is the potential for success. It's very successful, about 98% chance of effectiveness of it being treated, but a lot of people don't tolerate the CPAP. There are other side effects that you can tune in on another webinar. Oral appliance therapy, which are provided by trained dentists, a great option. There are definitely side effects that should be discussed one-on-one with a trained individual. And the success rate of that is about two-thirds of patients will respond, sometimes even up to 80%. It really depends on many factors for the oral appliances, but it is a great option for the majority of patients as well, so they need to know that. And there's a lot of confusion in that field right now. Now, we're not talking about over-the-counter devices, mouth devices. These are professionally made oral devices by trained dentists, and that's what we recommend because of the side effects. So these are, again, there's also what's the side effect or what could happen if no treatment was accepted. No treatment is a choice, and I think it's important for patients to realize what could happen if no treatment is accepted. And many people aren't aware that it is a life-threatening condition to treat your apnea if you have it. It could really affect other areas, including, you know, blood pressure, incidence of stroke. And there's a lot of information on that as well on another webinar that we have on our website. So what do you do? So if somebody has had a sleep test or they're thinking about having a sleep test, what is something that you might want to do? And I've created a list here. And the number one thing is get a copy of your sleep test and read it. And yes, there might be a lot of jargon on there that you might not understand. There are definitely certain words that you might not know, but very often in the summary portion, they will at least notate kind of overall the level. It might include, sometimes it doesn't include on that summary, were there pockets of time throughout the night that the events were elevated? But more typically for that, you have to look at the body of the sleep test results, not just at the end for that portion. Also, at that end portion, it might very often suggest other types of therapy, very often that has not been discussed personally. So go, just get the sleep test, keep it for your records. If you sleep, change physicians, or looking for an alternative to the CPAP, it's great to have that sleep test with you. It's a great starting point. Second thing to do, discuss those results with a medical professional trained in all options. And there's really a lot of physicians that are not trained in all options. So usually the physician, diplomats from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine or particular types of physicians, very often they have their sleep certifications through their own organizations. So it's good to talk to a physician that has that training, or if you're talking to a dentist, a diplomat of the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. If it's a diplomat, they're going to know different treatment options as well, and they will definitely help you sort through all this out. Those are great options. We do that with our patients all the time. They come to us, and we help sort everything out because it's very confusing sometimes. Third thing, just discover all your options based on the info that you have in your sleep test, as well as your obstacles or your lifestyle. For example, you need to bring this up to your medical professionals that you're talking about. If you are traveling a lot or overseas, we have patients that perform mission trips with their churches that can't get to electricity sometimes. This really needs to be discussed to help them guide you as to what might be the best treatment option for you. Or if somebody's young, they're dating, very often they will refuse to take that CPAP with, or some people who are traveling will refuse to take that CPAP. Well, know that there are other options, and you need to find out, are these other options okay for you? And another thing you could do is, contact us at 1-800-SNORING if you're in Northern Illinois, or if you need any help in any of this to help understand your sleep test better, or you can find us more information on the tiredofsnoring.com. That's our website, and on that you'll also, under the resources, it can help guide you to other trained professionals that were mentioned, these organizations, in today's podcast. So again, just to summarize the five questions that you need to ask after your sleep test. Number one, what was my actual diagnosis? Number two, is my overall diagnosis considered mild, moderate, or in the severe range? Thirdly, was the number the same throughout the entire night, or did it change and when? Fourth question, what are all the recommended treatments for my condition and the side effects and success rates with them? That's the last part. So find out all the success, side effects of all the recommended treatments. So a lot of information here today, and I hope that it can help those of you who have had a sleep test and have been kind of shuffled through and really not addressed all this information, or for those considering taking a sleep test in the future or have been prescribed that. Any other further questions, again, you can reach us to tiredofsnoring.com or listen into some of our other podcasts on the Sleep Health Connection. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today. For more information about oral appliance therapy in my practice, Dental Sleep and TMD Center of Illinois, please visit my website at tiredofsnoring.com and find the tab Patient Resources tab there. You can also call us again at 1-800-SNORING in Northern Illinois. Thank you, and this has been Dr. Lydia Sosenko for the Sleep Health Connection.